So, hello again, I'm Oren Mahikum to Cellabs again, and I will talk a bit about those fingerprint scanners on single machines and many more machines as you will learn later. So, how this all began? We were at OLS, and apparently they had too much time in waiting. And so we have seen a nice machine, or both on the ThinkPad had those fingerprint scanners. So we decided to just try to get them working. And it turned out to be reasonably easy. The point is that the scanner is a USB device, and it even had a binary-only driver for Linux and Windows. So I wouldn't use Windows just to get fingerprint scanner working. But installing the Linux driver wasn't that like out of place. So we just installed it, which was very, very painful, but it needed to work. And it was easy from then on. There was apparently not much information about the protocol. Someone actually tried contacting UPEC, like, give us the docs, please. And UPEC told them something like, no, we are not going to give you anything, we don't like open source. So it had to be reverse engineered. But as the driver was for Linux, it was really quite easy. So apparently the scanner should be 248 × 4 pixels, 8 bits per pixel. It's some kind of capacitive scanner, it depends proximity of your skin. But and it produced some kind of fingerprint files .bir, and they are too small to contain a bit. And they even have a variable size, which told us something like, okay, it doesn't look like a dumb device, it looks like it's actually fairly intelligent. And yes, it is. So what happened is that after a while we find out that the verification is basically very similar each pass. It only differed, no, it was just the communication. If you have verified fingerprint and it was successful, it was basically the same binary data each time. So if we thought, okay, if it's this easy, we will just replay it. And we replay the communication, and yes, it works. Unfortunately, it only got recognized the fingerprint you sniffed on the binary driver, which was not quite usable. But we could see some structure in the communication. And the only big missing part was the CSVs, because the communication is in packets. Every packet starts with hello in Italian language, ESCII by the way, and it ends with cyclic redundancy checksum. It took a while to figure it out, but some Russian hacker told us, hey, take a look at this function. And so it turned out even to be one of not the most common CSV you would use, but something common enough. And at this point, we were basically done. So the hardware is very, very clever. It basically does all the interesting stuff for you. So if you want to enroll a fingerprint, you just tell the hardware enroll, it asks user to swipe 3 times, and then produces a file. If you want to check a fingerprint, you do some initial communication, then you produce this file, and then it tells you either yes, it's okay, or no, it's someone else, or maybe error, something went wrong, like you swiped your finger too fast. So I developed a pretty trivial user space driver. Fortunately, the USB makes it extremely easy, so it was done like in 2 days, and then we added the CRC, and it took less than a week to quite usable state. We still do not understand most of the protocol. Like, there are data flowing. We know that we have to play these parts,
We had absolutely no idea what we are doing. Fortunately, it doesn't matter. We can't do cool stuff. Like, because the scanner is too intelligent, we don't know how to, for example, scroll with the scanner. It would be cool, like some devices don't have a scroll wheel, like the ThinkPad. And I don't really need a fingerprint scanner, but scroll wheel would be nice, right? And the fingerprint scanner could do that, but we don't know how to use it. Actually, Timo told me that there's probably some more advanced commands we could use and get all this stuff. Cool usage would be to use a fingerprint instead of username and still use a password. It's because maybe I don't trust my fingerprint scanner, and this is obviously not that security sensitive and so on. Anyway, what are the dangers of biometrics? The first one, this device is actually quite good because the image does not leave the USB device usually. Only some scrambled form leaves it. That's good because it means that the random hacker hacking my machine won't get my fingerprints. Well, it's still possible that he gets them, but he will get to get quite a lot of interesting reverse engineering. Bad thing is that because we don't have an image, it means it will be pretty much impossible to integrate this into your enterprise login system, because if you have different scanners from different manufacturers, they will probably use different proprietary binary blobs, so you will only be able to login to machines of the same vendor, which sucks. And we don't really know what data is in those binary blobs. Maybe it's like, let's classify the fingerprint into 5 different categories and be done with that or something. We don't know how good the recognition was. It seems to work quite okay. I haven't seen it. It has some false negatives, like you swipe and it won't let you in, but we haven't seen a false positive, like you swipe different finger and it lets you in. And even the false negatives is quite good. Like if you swipe your finger slow and nice, it tends to work most of the time. There are more dangers because your fingerprints are not really secret. Like I read them everywhere. The US government actually scans them and puts them into the database. So when someone has that, well, it's bad. Scanner is supposed to check if it's live finger that you are scanning. Well, but it's mostly impossible to do anyway, so. But the fingerprint scanners do try, and researchers do try, and found out that it's extremely easy to generate a fake finger from LaTeX. Then just put it over your finger and be done with that. All the security is gone. And what is the big problem? Unlike your password, you can't change your fingerprints. That's bad. You only have 10 changes. And yeah, using the password is not good. And you probably need a password backup anyway. Because your fingerprints can get damaged, or even maybe just your hand is covered with some medical tape or something. So you can't do a very, very well password. Too bad. It's currently breakthrough. Now, it turned out that while the driver is extremely easy, the integration to the Linux is not. So I kind of left it to someone else. And that someone else is Timo from Nuremberg.
Thanks, Paul. My name is Tim. Timo. I'm working in Nuremberg at the SUSE Research and Development Department at the team from Mobile Devices. And last year when Pavel finished his work, he was posting it to RKML and his blog, and the responses were massive, like everyone was jumping on and wanted to use the fingerprint reader. So it was pretty clear that we want to use it in an integrated way in the distribution. So I jumped in and I just took his code, created a user space library, which you can use in your applications to link against and just use the fingerprint reader. And afterwards, I implemented a pen module to be able to log into your system using the fingerprint reader. Now, let's see. I'll first talk about the whole context of the project, what it is about and how it is integrated. Then I will talk a little bit about the design and the architecture of the ThinkFinger project. And this will be followed by a short overview of what is working now, how you can install it, and I will give you a short demonstration, which is hopefully interesting to see how far we are. As we've heard by Pavel before, it's for the UPEC device. There are currently two devices out on the market. It's a scanner, which is produced by Authentic. It's basically a dumb fingerprint scanner because it's basically an image scanner which gives you an image and that's it. So you have to do the comparison between images and fingerprints in software. And there are efforts and ways to support this as well, but that's not done by us and it's not part of the ThinkFinger project. It might be that we merge efforts in some later point of time. So at first we had the IBM ThinkPads and Lenovo ThinkPads which were compatible. That's just the start, because after we published the work we saw that Asus, Dell and Toshiba have the same device in their laptops. So basically ThinkFinger should be renamed to, I don't know, to Finger something, because it supports all all kinds of laptops. Also, there are a few external keyboards which are shipping with the fingerprint reader, connected via USB, basically the same connection as in the laptop, and they are working fine as well. Now, UPEC doesn't like open source, as Paul mentioned before. One guy on the demo list just contacted them after we went open source with our driver, and that is all they had to say about it. They just don't give any information about the device itself. I found some information about the format of the BIR files. Actually, BIR is an acronym for Biometric Identification Record. It's a format where you have some header followed by a binary block. The header tells you about the version of the file and whether it's a fingerprint or a voice recognition or an ear print or anything. But they don't share anything with us besides that. Thus, Pavel jumped in and created the nice little driver, which now is working fine. So my aim at first was to score off the proprietary closed source driver. The problem with the binary driver is that if you use the PEM enhancements which they are shipping, you are only able to log into your system using your fingerprint. You are not able to log in using your password any longer. So basically if you burn your finger, you are not able to get into your system anymore. So that is basically not acceptable. Second thing, for sure, it should be easy. Anyone should be able to authenticate and install the driver, so there should not be any rocket science to get things going. And also, I saw that minimum tend to like it because they don't like to remember passwords, so swipe on the finger, they like that. Right in the beginning, I was thinking about how we can achieve our goals, and it was clear that we have to divide the PEM stuff from the actual driver so that other applications can be easily using the driver as well, not only the PEM module. So we have a lib ThinkFinger, the library, and PEM ThinkFinger for the PEM integration. The focus for LibFinger was that we want to keep the dependencies at a minimum so that people are able to use it even, I don't know, in the earliest stage of boot time, like in the init or something. So this is one aim. And the other thing is that we wanted to keep complex things in the library. The worst problem about the device is that there is only one USB ID. It always identifies itself as a specific ID, vendor product ID. But there are several revisions of the fingerprint chip. So the first version, which was developed on the X60 by Pavel, it worked fine for the T62 and for the X60, but it didn't work on older ThinkPad models, which also had the same chip, but slightly different version. So we had to work around a few things there, and with a complex and with a lib thinker. Now, the user space driver in the ThinkFinger, as I mentioned before, it's only having a few dependencies. It's just libUSB it links against, and it's written in C. If you want to use it in your own application, you just have to allocate some memory and initialize some structs. You can do that by calling libFinger new. Afterwards, you have to set a file where you want to store a fingerprint or where the fingerprint print remains, which we want to authenticate against or we want to verify. So to acquire a fingerprint, you afterwards just call this function and you will be prompted to swipe your finger 3 times and afterwards you have the biometric identification record. After that, you are able to call the verify function, which will read in the DIR file, send it over to the USB device, and then you are prompted to swipe your finger and it will tell you whether the finger was matching or not. I've included a small example application you will see in the demonstration afterwards. It's called TF2, which gives you all the functionality I've mentioned before. Now, the not so complex part in code, but very difficult part to implement was the PAM module, because of the mentioned request that we want to be able to authenticate by password and by swiping our finger. So basically we have 2 paths in PEM at the same time. First of all, if the PEM module gets active and there is no identification record stored, we jump out of the module because we cannot use the fingerprint reader. So the PEM stack goes on and the next authentication module like Unix2, check password is running. A little dirty hack is the following. We are using uInput to send a carriage return after a swipe. That's because we have a lot of applications which are expecting that you type a password. And after you have typed a password, you always hit carriage return. So the read function jumps out and the PEM can go on. But in our case, if we just swipe the finger across the device, we have no event, so the application is still stuck in the code and doesn't know that how to proceed. So basically what I'm doing is just sending a faked carriage return after the finger was swiped. So a little flowchart to see how things go. First thing, if no identification record is there, we just go out and return PEM user unknown, which will result in jumping to the next PEM module. If there is a biometric identification record, we are starting 2 prompts. The first prompt is basically the same prompt as for a regular login session, with the PEM prompt, which will prompt you with a string for password. And the second thread will be is the thinking of thread. If the user enters a password, we are actually storing the password in a PEM structure and then we are returning PEM service error. But it's not a type, we are just returning service error because we are not able to verify that the password was correct. So we just store the password in a structure and the PEM stack goes on and it will recognize that there's a password entered already and will just check for that password. On the other hand, you're swiping your finger, it will just check whether it was the correct finger. So if it was the wrong finger, it just returns authentication error. That's the same return value as if you would have typed the wrong password. And if it was a match, we just return PEM success and we'll log in. So that's basically all. To give you a bigger picture of this integrated into a Linux distribution, to build the whole project, you will basically need pandas and GPUSB. You just configure, make install, and 2 years pan afterwards, you have to do one step manually if you don't have any RPMs, which will provide this step for you. You have to add this line, auth proficient pan-finger.store, that's a pan module, to the policy file of pan, so that it is aware of the whole pan module of pan-finger. But basically, that's enough to get started. I've verified quite some applications to work with Thinking at the moment. It's Login, Su, and Sulu. They work out of the box. They are quite well prepared for PAM. They are prompting you for a new string. It says, enter password for the finger, while other applications on the graphical sides, like GnomeSu and GnomeScreenZero, they still need some love to get proper PAM support. GDM is very well integrated. It works out of the box. One thing what I have seen is that KDE is not very well prepared, so we are in discussion with the developers how to deal with that. Also, I've created some fixes for GnomeScreenZero, which is not yet upstream because we have to discuss the whole integration of PAM in the graphical bits, because the fingerprint authentication is a really completely new way of authenticating of PAM. Authentication, so there are some changes required for that. Okay. Now, let's see, I've got prepared a short demonstration. So whenever you see the password prompt, and now you see that GM is very well prepared for the PAM authentication, because the PAM module passes the string password or swipe finger to GDM, and it respects that. It doesn't have any hard-coded string, so it prompts us for that. And if I'm now swiping my finger, it's loading in. Take some time. Okay, so that's a regular desktop. I will first show you the eye candy stuff, and afterwards I will show you the TF tool commands how to gather to store a fingerprint. So now, for example, if you start the control center and have some modules which require root privileges, I can launch that. This is basically GnomeSu running with the parameter spnas2lan to start the network configuration. And here you can see the first thing. It's not very relevant because it's only asking for the password. It's not recognizing the string we've been sending by PAM. But nevertheless, it works. So I slap my finger, I got authenticated, and it's running. Another thing is GnomeScreenZero. This was a little painful to implement because it required quite some patches to work. The screen that was now active. I'm moving on. Okay, here we go. It's also not recognizing our strings in hand, so it asks for the password, but I use my finger. And it's unlocked, so this works quite well. If we now have a look at the command line tool, we can, first of all, inquire. Oops. That's this. Ooh. I'm using my finger again. So now that's the prompt to swipe the finger. You'll see it's 103. If I'm moving too slow or something, we should get a failed swipe. We'll swipe it 3 times. And now it's storing the biometric identification data. You can also do something like that. For
For example, if
I want to change to the user of Husband, I have the thing installed, okay? Let's not do that. I will simply delete the fingerprint. And if I now repeat the same step, we are not going to be blocked for the fingerprint because it's not starting anymore. But you can do, you can use TF tool again to add this user. This does basically the same, but at the end copies all the fingerprint to the correct location.
About U input,
yes.
But in the previous version you was not using
it? Yeah, it was a hack. Before using U input, I was simply killing the other thread. So we have the two threads running, and once one thread succeeded, it was killing the other thread, and so it returned. But it turns out that this thread, which is running in the PEM prompt, it's running in the application which uses PEM. So this is very dirty and it might also be error prone. Yeah. So
because for now it's a bit tricky to package it.
I know that. I'm aware of that, but I've discussed this with the security guys at SUSE and it's still a hack because it's using a fake input event, using U input. But the other way, killing the other thread, is not a solution as well.
Okay.
So I'm aware that there will be some packaging issues, I think especially on Fedora. This is not yet working out of the box with U-input.
Yeah, but for me, I'm using Ubuntu and it's not working.
Okay.
And also you have to mod probe U-input.
But this can be easily solved by UDev or using a little RC script. So this shouldn't be a showstopper for any application.
And because someone on the IRC was talking that it's a bit overkill to use a Canon module just for that, but I don't know.
The thing is, what made me use input without any concern is that we have a package called Hotkey Setup, which is used by Ubuntu, Fedora, SUSE, at least, I'm aware of those three. And this also requires your input, at least for ThinkPads. So it's already two consumers of this kind of module. So the module is there for using it. So
the solution would probably be to fix those applications to not require the carriage return.
Yeah, it depends on that component there as well.
But it's more all those complaining about the kernel modules, tell them to send patches against the applications waiting for the carriage return. If they don't do that, they have to load the module. It's a hack, but to get it going at least, it's needed.
Okay, see the point. I've also looked for the patch for GNOME screensaver, but there is nothing on the GNOME Bugzilla, I don't know.
It's basically a distribution specific patch.
Okay.
That's why I didn't send it anywhere. It's an outdated version of GNOME screensaver we saw here. And I even don't want this patch to be upstream because it's another hack. And the PEM backend of GNOME screensaver desperately needs some love. So we better work on the proper solution, and we've got enough GNOME guys in the ground, So I will work with them to get a proper solution, and this will also help us if we work on an authentic reader or other authenticated scripts.
In the middle term, it will be upstream, so it will be solved, I think.
Yeah. It will be solved within the next month.
Yeah.
My patch isn't worth for anyone because it's only pseudo specific and you have to patch clone string server. Yeah. And this patch doesn't help you on any other distribution because there's another authentication helper running, which is only running on SUSE, which I'm not happy about either. And so.
You can get the patch, but we don't want to hide it. It's not really. Let's say this is the technology preview.
Yeah, because there is also a bug with, for me, under Ubuntu and under Debian, I think, for GCast sudo, which is hidden because the prompt is displayed in the console.
I think this is a general bug for GCast sudo because whenever a PEM module overrides the PEM prompt, it's not working any longer. So it's not a thinking problem. It's a real bug in GKSU.
Right, I reported the bug upstream for GKSU.
Yeah. Any further questions? Okay, thanks for coming. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.